Advent 3. Isaiah 35, the whole chapter, I will do our best. There's some very tough stuff in here, both in terms of vocab, syntax and grammar, as well as trying just to figure out what the words are. We're okay through about verse 7. At least a little isagogical introduction here. Chapters 34 and 35 are really rather key chapters in Isaiah. The book of Isaiah has traditionally been divided between 39 and 40. There's a fresh thinking that is trying to split the book at 33-34. In either case, these chapters become kind of pivotal as central to the structure of the book, not to mention to the theme of the book. That 34 is kind of woe, and 35 is kind of wheel, law and gospel, has often been observed, and they seem to form a little bit of a pair. My point is this, that you should see this both in context of the whole book and message of Isaiah, and certainly should read 35 in light of 34, that he's just pronounced destruction there on Edom, as almost representative or typological of all the Goyim. And in contrast to that heavy word of law and judgment now, we get to 35, which is pretty much pure gospel. And not just gospel applied to the nations, but gospel applied to all creation. Very eschatological. All creation that continues to groan, even in our day and age, shall do just the opposite. And verses 1 and 2 pile up all these words for joy. Either Isaiah was just very good, or he had a thesaurus. Or we'll chalk this one up to inspiration by the Holy Spirit. But he sure can pile up words. Yisusu midbar v'tziyah. Now, sus, or cease, is the word for rejoice or be glad. And you just get lots of synonyms here, okay? In fact, he's kind of just piling up all the words he can find. He, you know, clicked on the CD-ROM thesaurus here and looked under the semantic field of joy, all right? But look what it is that will rejoice. The midbar and the tziyah. All right, the wilderness and tziyah means dry place. All right, can also mean thirsty. So the wilderness and the dry land will be glad, and she will gil, the araba will gil, and parach. Now you got kind of a poetic problem here. What do you do with that ka, whatever this thing is, in the next line, ka chavat selath, which is generally translated like the crocus, or little desert flower that pops up when it rains. The Masoretes put that at the end of this line. The text editors of BHS, in their infinite wisdom, decided it goes better with the next line. Well, I don't know. It's very awkward here. It certainly overloads the first line, but I tend to trust the Masoretes more than text critics or text editors on this sort of thing. But look at the six words you have. The first clause, or the first colon, the wilderness and the dry land will rejoice, you have two subjects and one verb. The second three words are one subject and two verbs. All right, I think that's just kind of neat. The Araba will tagil, or tagail from gil. Do you know the song Hava Nagila from gil, the cohortative, let us gil? Let us rejoice. This is the same root. The Araba will rejoice, and parach means to kind of break or actually break forth in blossom, or here in joy, like this little desert flower. Paroch tifroch. Here's parach again with the infinitive absolute. She or it will certainly parach, and she will gil af, truly, with a gilath and renane. Now, gilath is the noun from gil. Joy and ranan, shouts of joy. I'm not sure you can diagram this last clause, Like I said, he's almost just piling up words. Line three, Kavod HaLevona, the glory of the Lebanon, Nitan Niphal of Nathan, will have been, I'm going to take this as a future perfect, or the so-called prophetic perfect, since the tense is clearly perfect here, will be given to her, to what? To the Arabah, this desert region, and the Kadar of the Carmel, the splendor of Carmel, and the Sharon. They tend to capitalize place names like this. Carmel and Sharon being the coastal plains, which were, unlike the rather dry hill country, relatively lush. Hema, now we get sort of why. There's almost a joke here on Kavod. The Kavod of Lebanon will be given to the Arabah. The point, however, is that they, Hema, Yir'u, they will see the Kavod Yahweh, the Hadar Eloheinu. So it's sort of like the glory, the Kavod and the Hadar of earthly things are only a sort of reflection of the real Kavod, that is the Kavod Yahweh and the Hadar Eloheinu. End of part one. Three. Chazku Yadayim Rafot. Chazku is PL imperative, right out of the textbook. Chazak means to be strong, and the PL it means to strengthen. Strengthen Yadayim, a pair of hands. Nice dual there. Rafoth means weak. Hands are feminine, body parts are feminine. Strengthen weak hands, and birkayim, and pairs of knees. Barak or barak really means a knee. A knee that is koshaloth, and the kashaling knees. Now, kashal means to, what's a good word? Kind of totter, teeter-totter, kind of be unstable, you know, like a guy walking with a cane. And the tottering knees, ametsu from amatz. You could probably guess what that means. It's a synonym of chazak, strengthen. Say to the nihrelev, nihre is the nifal participle, plural masculine, construct state of the verb mahar, which means to hurry up. In the nifal, it has the idea of sort of be hurried, which isn't really a passive, but it's got this idea of being in a hurry. What's a good English? Do we say when your heart races is in a hurry? I don't know if we have the same idea here. To the hurried of heart, this is generally translated nervous, or I think skittish is kind of a good word for this. You know how little animals are skittish, that they're sort of quick to pull back. Now, what are you supposed to say to these guys? Kizku, now we get it, nakal, be strong, al tira'u, do not fear. Why not? Here's the punchline, huh? Hine Elohe Kem. You almost don't have to say anymore. I've always wanted to write a little monograph, which was essentially Hine Elohekem. I think you could do a biblical theology on these two words. Behold your God. You've said it all, if you want to unpack that for the rest of your life. Now, this is also exactly what you're supposed to say to the cities of Judah in chapter 40. And I don't want to get back into all the isagogic stuff, but I think it's very clear that chapters 34 and 35 hook up to chapter 40 and anticipate it, which is another reason why you should split the book at 33, 34. That's been tended to be lost in the division between chapters 39 and 40. Behold your God. Now look at these two lines. Behold your God, nakam yavo. Vengeance, he comes. We'd make that adverbial, I guess, with nakam. Now, vengeance isn't a good word, but we're stuck with it. We tend to hear vengeance as a negative, kind of, I'm going to get back at you, see? When nakam really has the idea of justice, There's sort of a right way in which you can understand vengeance as evening the score, but that's what justice is all about. Remember, the symbol of justice is always scales, getting the stuff in balance, okay? So this is more of a positive motif of the semantic field of mishpat and tzedakah, doing righteousness and justice in the earth. We're stuck with this. With vengeance, I don't know. Behold your God, he comes with setting things right. The gemul of our God. Now, gemul is generally translated recompense, and is another word you're sort of stuck with. It's really, again, sort of one of these justice terms, getting things back into balance. The recompense of our God, he will come. Now, just take a minute to smell of roses here on a great poetic bicolon. Actually, there's four pieces to these two lines, eight words, okay? Hine Elohe Kem Nakam Yavo Gamul Elohim Hu Yavo. What pieces match? Well, the two Yavos obviously match, right? What's in the first line? You have Nakam. What's its counterpart in the second line? Gamul, right? So they match, but you have to draw a line diagonal to make them match. What matches in the first line to Elohe Kem? Obviously, Elohim. There's a direct parallel. That line you can connect straight vertical. So what matches? That leaves you with two pieces, Hine and Hu, which semantically don't make a match, but they're both little words that start with H, all right? And I think there's kind of a sound match there. But to make them match up, you have to draw a diagonal line, and you've made an X with the other diagonal line. So you have two words that are matched in a linear way, two words that are matched in a chiastic way. This is a very, very well-worked little line. Now, what's missing? Do you see that the piece that's left out of all of this nicely worked literary structure is V'yoshakem at the end? Because that's standing separately. And I think the poetic structure makes that point. See? This is really kind of the clincher at the end. This is why he's coming with recompense and vengeance. And why it's important that he is Elohe Kem, your God. He will come and he will save you. Future, no wow consecutive. This is about as bare bones a future indicative as you can find. And I think that thing just stands out sort of as almost an independent line in and of itself. It's not a very good poetic line to have one word, but this one word is worth a whole line. Then, Az Tipakachna Eine Irurim. Then they will be pakacht. Boy, there's a great form to parse. It's actually 100% regular. Pakach means to open. There's another word, pathach, that means to open, but eyes are always pakach. Doors and everything else are pathach. Nifal, imperfect, third, feminine plural. Remember that na form? Tau prefix, na suffix, you learned it and never used it. The subject is ene, the eyes, because body parts are feminine. The eyes of the, you want to guess what iweri means? These are the blind. The eyes of blind ones will be opened, and ears, the ozens of the chereish, of the deaf ones, will be pathacht, opened. Aha! There's the other word for open, pathacht. But these aren't eyes, these are ears. Then, verse 6, yidaleg like an ayel a paseach. A paseach is a limping guy. A limping guy will daleg, will leap, jump, like an ayal. An ayal is a deer. All right? I always think of those springbok things they have in Africa that jump almost straight up about 10 feet. Certain basketball players come to mind. Then the limping guy will jump like the deer, and Taron... This is the same verb ranan that we had at the end of the second line way at the beginning. The verb now in the feminine will shout for joy. Lishon elaim. Lishon is the word for tongue. The tongue of a dumb, in the sense of not being able to speak, will shout for joy. 6b, because nivka'u bamidbar mayim, the subject is mayim, waters will have bakad, broken out, bamidbar, in the midbar, picking up the midbar from verse 1, and nichalim, in the Arabah. A nachal is a wadi, a seasonal stream, dry stream, except when it rains, then get out of there because it's going to be a flash flood. That's what a nachal here. River De Pere in South County is a nachal, otherwise known as a sewage drainage ditch. And wadis in the Arabah. And the sharav, the another word for now we get into this is where it gets real muddy in more ways than one. It's another word for dry, parched land. Will be to an agan. You know that idiom hayalamed will become a marsh. An agan is kind of a swamp. And the tsimaon, that's another word for dry ground. It's interesting how many words for dry ground they had. Does this tell you something about their climate? It's like the Eskimos have. How many words for snow, right? One of which probably means yellow snow. And the dry ground will become pools of mayim. In the lair, a nawa is a place where wild animals live, of tanim are jackals, will be its... Now, ravats, didn't we see this last week? What did we do last week? When the wolf and the lamb lie down together, they ravats. All right, this means animals to be at peace, lying out in the field, chewing whatever animals chew at that time. Animals, there will be this peaceful scene of animals right there where the jackals live. Get the point? And cane or katsir is grass. Will become Kane, Cain. There's one of the few cognates you have. Cain and Gomer's papyrus. Okay, you get the point of all of this? I think we're making the point here. But you notice it's twofold. It's not just creation. It's also human afflictions. The blind will see, the deaf, but it's all the same eschatology, which is now, how did he put that? The future has broken into the present here. Yeah. Verse 8. Vahaya sham, and it will be there a maslul, a highway, and a way of the holiness will be called to it. This is the now holy highway. Not will go up upon it a tameh, an unclean guy, and it to them will be a walking place, a walker of a road. Oh, Lord, I don't want to even try here. I've got this figured out, I think, but we don't have time to make it work. Something about a guy on a holy highway, all right? And the awalim, fool, idiots, good town idiot, the fools not will wander onto it. You know, why is it? Pause here. Is this a law or gospel motif, that there won't be any unclean people on it, there won't be any fools on it? Is that because they're banned from it? We get rid of all these unclean people? Or is it because they've been cleansed? Huh? And they're not stupid anymore. Not will be there an aryeh, a lion, and a peritz kayoth, and a praying living thing will not go up on it. Not will be found there, I think, any of the above. And now we get at the second of line 9b, the sham, here they really butchered it, the sham has to go with the previous line. They will walk, who? The ge'ulim, the kal passive participle of ga'al, to redeem. The redeemed will walk there. The ransomed of Yahweh will return, and they will come Zion. They will come Zion way. Birinah, with this shout of joy. And joy of perpetuity. Simchat Olam, and perpetual joy upon their rosh, upon their head. Sason, do you see how we're ending where we started here? We're piling up words for joy again. In fact, a lot of them are the same. This Gil and Sason, and Simchat, and Renah. Sason, gladness, and Simchat Yagishu will overtake them, capture them. It's kind of neat. Not wild animals capturing you, but joy and gladness coming up and catching you from behind. Isn't that a neat image? And nous, nasu, and the other side of this is yagon, sorrow and mourning will nous, will flee away. Usually it's the smart guys that run away from the bad guys, and here the bad stuff's running away from the good stuff. See? Okay, we got to quit there. Golly, you could go on forever, but we better leave something for... this is a tough section. That this relates to John the Baptist's question. Is that the text? I didn't even look. Yeah, well, you'll make the point then. That's obviously in the background here. And what better eschatological text could you want, Mr. Gibbs?
Yeah.